today on Mother Mayhem.
You scan with your mother, and your mother doesn't notice. So you think you're, quote, end quote, doing good in the relationship. However, for people who want to connect with you, they don't read that scanning as kind, nice, or thoughtful. They read it as distant, as being an observer versus being present, and they assume that you aren't necessarily present or connected. Welcome back to Mother Mayhem, the Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Podcast for Daughters. Hi, I'm your host, Heather Gray, and I want to start by admitting openly that I have honestly been avoiding this particular episode like the plague, even a little shaky in my belly as I talk. This already feels quite vulnerable for me, and I am only a couple of sentences in, and I haven't even named the topic yet. Here it goes. Today, we're talking about building and maintaining friendships as adults when we have childhoods marked by trauma. I use the word we on this quite deliberately, as I am really in this one with you guys too. I have no problems admitting that adult friendships in my life have made for my greatest joys and my greatest heartbreaks, often with the same person. I can only do this episode if I full-on admit that I totally have imposter syndrome as I'm talking to you. I keep waiting for the real therapist to show up for this particular chat. Honestly, I really wish I could just hand this one over to Oprah and Gail and say, hey, you guys have this down. You cover for me. I might not know what the fuck it is I'm talking about. I can tell you that in my freshman year of college, I had attracted a bunch of really depressed girls as friends. Every one of them had an issue of some kind, and of course that makes sense for women in their late teens who were going to school to be social workers. But I'd gone away for a day, taking a me day, and I came back to a series of demanding and pressure-filled voice messages from said friends. They were dramatic about my absence, expectant that I would follow up with them immediately. And I had this in my bones feeling that I could not feel responsible for a group of friends' well-being so much so that I wasn't able to leave campus for a day without it being a thing. I ended 4 friendships that night, one by one. I knocked on their doors and let them know that I couldn't have that kind of friendship in my life. It was too much. After being so restricted growing up, I needed to be able to leave whenever I wanted, and I wanted to be accountable to no one. I can also tell you that at the start of my sophomore year in college, my best friend broke up with me, and I lost my entire friend group with the exception of 2 people in one fell swoop because all of our mutual friends together chose her. I can tell you that I have a friend today who has been one of my best friends since 1999, and yet we have 2 breakups in our history. I had one breakup in 2013 with another very close friend who I had managed to be friends with for 15 years. And then we have 2023. It was quite the banner year for me. It began with the difficult decision to end one close friendship, and it ended with another friendship that was really a sisterhood, just blowing the fuck up. You all are so used to me being open about my history and know that I like to use my experiences and stories as examples. I really do believe that as a therapist, that if I have thoroughly unpacked and packed something I have been through, it can make for a strong clinical connection to share. I can also very easily tell you that I am not done unpacking or packing the year that was 2023, so I simply cannot say anything else about it. And of course, I know you guys understand and respect that, but please do know that it's hard for me to even acknowledge any of this publicly. But also, not saying it was starting to feel like lying. Now you know the dirty details, and I can stop feeling like I've been running from them or pretending to be something or someone I'm not. I also have to acknowledge that discussing this particular topic today comes with a distinct level of vulnerability and self-consciousness. The reality is that these former friends of mine may be, in fact, tuning in to listen. As we're all too aware, social media can sometimes invite a bit of stalking. That's par for the course, of course, and I've accepted that at this point. But it also means that I find myself sometimes navigating messages that may or may not actually be coming from you, one of the daughters, actual members of my listening community. As you might imagine, a maneuver like that forces me to be aware of, nice to, and nurturing towards someone no longer in my life. Unlike them, I'm in a public space, both here on the show and on social media, as I try to build my private practice and as I try to foster this community. This means they have the advantage of anonymity while I navigate this conversation openly and oh so publicly. It's hard not to imagine them yelling hypocrite at me as I start to talk to you, and I do imagine them calling out inconsistencies in what I say to you versus how they experience me. It all feels very exposing, but I trust you, my podcast listening community, to see me. I trust you to know my heart and my intentions, and also, quite frankly, I trust you to hold me a little bit and my vulnerability on this. I am leaning into that with each point I make. I know I have earned your trust, and you have earned mine. I'm leaning on that as I continue this conversation, which feels altogether public and so exposing for me. I also know, though, that even though those friendships have ended, there's longevity behind them, and that counts for more than something. There was far more good than bad in all of them. The quality or worth of relationships is not going to be determined by how they ended. I simply don't believe relationships are failures just because they didn't last forever. Some simply aren't meant to. You, for sure, are hearing my pain in this, but you aren't hearing shame. We don't have to be defined or limited by the things that are hard for us, and we shouldn't be made to feel small for having them. After all, we're all still showing up here. We're trying, and that says a whole hell of a lot, I'd like to think. So I've been sitting on two questions about this topic, and I'm going to work really hard to do my best by the listeners, by all of you, and quite frankly, by myself. I know that the three of us aren't the only ones looking at these issues in our lives. And admittedly, I almost named today's listeners Oprah and Gail, but that is a lot of pressure for anyone to live up to. So instead, let me just go with Anne, spelled with an E, and of course Diana, after my beloved characters in Anne of Green Gables. So here's to bosom friends, and I pray to God you all know that's an Anne of Green Gables reference. Otherwise, I just took this show to a whole unexpected level. Before I dive into the letters for today, let's just zoom the lens out a bit and allow me to talk from a little bit of a psychobabble perspective, if you will, about why all of this is so hard, so emotional, and so challenging for us. You're going to hear Anne in her letter ask me why learning about friendships as an adult feels so elementary. And of course it does. You couldn't learn normal relationships as kids. You were too busy surviving the relationships you had already been handed. And during really formative years, your relational skills were being informed by a narcissist. Of course, many of you still feel like you're catching up and making up for lost time. It makes even more sense when we're reminded how you're all learning about boundary setting and reducing people-pleasing tendencies. All of this ends up being a lot. And of course, some of it makes sense, right? After all, if our own mothers couldn't love us, how are we supposed to believe that other women would, could, or would even want to? We internalize stories about ourselves in early childhood, and then those internalized stories become our truths about ourselves as we get older. We make decisions from that place, we show up from that place, and given that those stories become so ingrained in us when we're so young, we believe them to be true about ourselves. We don't know that they're just stories. So if our moms expected us to be performers or doers of some kind or overachievers when in relationships with them, we're going to end up assuming that that's what others expect of us. So we'll be programmed to always be doing something for a friend, or we're going to be programmed to believe that we're never really good enough, but we'll keep working to be good enough just like we did with our moms. Also, too, with our moms, let's face it, there were right answers and there were wrong answers. But we were in this endless guessing game trying to figure out what the right answer was for that particular day. And to have a prayer of knowing what those right answers would be, we always had to scan our moms to know their moods, to anticipate their needs, and to be in an endless game of what I call prevent defense. You all know I follow football, right? So some of us were raised totally enmeshed with our moms. Some of you ladies were attached to your moms at the hips. And we're either, when that happens, going to move into adulthood thinking that that's what friendship should be, or we might go fleeing from that kind of relationship and crave cool, composed distance inside of friendships. And the opposite ends up being true too. If your moms were distant, if they were removed or inconsistent, you might find that you expect distance in relationships and might be surprised when someone ends up wanting or craving more intimacy. Likewise, again, that pendulum can swing right back in the opposite direction for other daughters. If they were raised by emotionally unavailable moms, they may end up seeking people who were intensely available and intensely connected because they're looking for that bond that they always wanted and never had. Each of us have internalized our own experiences in our own kinds of ways, and until we bring those stories into light and test them just a bit, we operate as if they're true. We never think to say some of the things out loud or check our stories because we just assume they're true for the other person too. This is another area sometimes too where attachment theory and attachment issues show up for a lot of daughters. Some of you women listening may identify with having what we call an anxious attachment style, and you guys have heard me talk about this in previous episodes. Others of you listening may know that you might be more avoidant in your attachment style. And still others of you are going to be in that combination of a little anxious and a little avoidant. And that, again, just as a reminder, creates what we call a disorganized attachment style. So in relationships, there ends up being this common therapy cliche, if you will, that often ends up ringing true. We tend to recreate dynamics from our childhood. Whether it's romantic partnerships or friendships, we often find ourselves drawn to individuals who reflect those familiar patterns and tendencies. This can stem, sometimes you've heard me talk about, from unmet childhood needs that we unconsciously end up seeking to fill in adulthood. For example, we might be trying to get an emotionally unavailable person to become emotionally available, because that may end up feeling like that attempt to heal those past wounds we have from our parents. Our self-perception of worthiness plays a role in these dynamics, and it leads us to ending up choosing partners who replicate those familiar patterns. And then, too, we're all creatures of habit, so we end up seeking consistency in our relationships. So if we grew up with aloof and distant connections, encountering someone who displays those traits might feel oddly comforting because it's familiar, even though aloofness and distance may not exactly be comforting, nurturing, or soothing. It feels like home because it's what we're used to. That sense of familiarity can create this subconscious sense of safety, even if it's not conducive to healthy relationships or any kind of emotional growth. It's sort of like gravitating towards what we know, even if what we know isn't necessarily what's best for us in the long run. And then it gets really, really spicy, of course, when we are used to distance, aloofness, and conditional connection and are met with love, warmth, intimacy, or other expectations for some form of closeness. So knowing ourselves and our stories and using that self-awareness to fuel our choices and friendships is obviously going to be important here. But as you hear when I talk to Anne and Diana, we're also challenged to break relational patterns and are tested to communicate at a level that has very likely not been modeled for us, rewarded, or respected. Most of you daughters are used to your attempts at communication being met with more abuse. not more understanding. So let's first dive in together and hear what Anne Withinney has to say. Sitting on this side of things now, recognizing that my mother is narcissistic, I've begun to wonder how her style of parenting has impacted me, not in the overt ways that are classic or common ways of living with a narcissistic mother, but the quiet and subtle ways that may be hard to tease out. One of those is friendships. I don't know that this can be pinned on being raised by a narcissist, and my situation definitely has some layers to it, like being adopted and having parents that got divorced, but friendships have been something that I love but struggle with a whole lot. So I was just wondering if there was some connection, and if so, how do we start working around it? Because while religion and God give solace and guidance to a lot of people, I believe in connection, a connection to all. I love connecting with people, connecting with other people together, bringing people together, and so on. But I feel scared sometimes too. This might be normal, but I was curious if there was more to the story. So to explain further, I enjoy people, meeting them, talking with them, sharing meals, trips, ideas, support. But a lot of the time I'm wondering if I said the right thing, rehashing a conversation I had with someone, beating myself up about what I said before, wondering how best to express gratitude toward a friend. It seems like I come off like a parent to some of my same age peers, and that feels weird. Like I remember telling a friend of mine how proud I was of her after landing her first job out of college and how excited she was. She told me that I sounded like her parents. People are drawn to me, and I say this to mean I know I'm not generally an off-putting person, of course you're not, but then I have a hard time getting close to people. I feel distant even being with them. This isn't every day, all day, or all the time, but enough when I find it hard to make close friends. I try to open up to show that I trust them. I ask about their lives, but yet the friendships feel cordial. I get told often how organized I am and how people think I've got it all together. But in my head, I feel like chaos and like life is swirling all around me. I don't know if I come off judgy or impersonal, but I see people at work make friends so easily. Does my lacking confidence show? I try to be nice, but I don't think that's exactly what it takes to make those close friendships. Sometimes I feel robotic, and I think that this is an emotional protection piece that comes from time to time. I think at times I'm good at making a lot of friends, but struggle to make close friends. I'd love to have a group of close friends. I do in Colorado, but we don't keep up often. I feel a distance between me and close friends sometimes too, actually. I feel this distance often, like two conversations going on in one. The one in front of me with this person or friend and the inside judge holding constant comment about how I'm doing in the conversation. At times, the inner voice is cheering me on and other times telling me I'm not making good conversation. Not all the time. I have a few friendships where I can be totally me and I don't second guess a thing. I would like to have friendships like that where I currently live, though. So now that I've talked at you and rambled on with my pre-coffee thoughts, I will get to questions. How has my upbringing affected my ability to make friendships? What subtle ways has her particular narcissism creeped into my adult self that negatively affect the way I connect with people today? I hate that present but distant feeling when I'm with someone. It's distracting and not helpful. What is that and how do I work around it? Sometimes these feelings and concerns about my friendships feel very elementary, like I haven't emotionally matured. Is that a common theme? Lastly, what are some tips for moving beyond these struggles for someone with a history of narcissistic abuse? I know I can still improve on speaking up for myself and being more of a friend to myself as well, but I really like to understand how a problem came to be as it helps me understand myself and move forward. Whew, okay, Anne. We're just all going to take a deep breath. Thank you so much for that letter and the vulnerability you shared and the honesty. There's so many women listening to this and going, yeah, and me too, me too. I so feel you on this, and I want to reflect something for you here. Even in your questions, you, my friend, are stuck in your head. You think that if you can understand the problem, you can see your way through it. And this is likely a skill that has worked very well for you with your mom. If you could understand her, read her, know her moods, you would know what to say. You might not always get the right answer, but you would often be close. When dealing with a narcissistic mom, it's important to recognize that they have this love for being the center of attention. Narcissists thrive on being admired and prioritized, which is why they often encourage others to constantly scan and focus on them. It's crucial to remember, though, that narcissists lack the ability to truly engage in relationships. Their perspective is skewed, and they're unable to comprehend or empathize with any kind of emotion. What matters most to them is how they are perceived, not the actual dynamics of the relationship. This often leads to this one-sided dynamic where you're constantly trying to please them, but they show little to no regard for your feelings or your needs. So of course you end up thinking that that's how to do well in relationships and what a relationship is. However, there's no relationship there. If you make connections or friends in that manner and that dynamic works for them, they are likely another emotionally limited person. Most people, when connecting with people, want reciprocity in friendships. They want that give and take. They, of course, want to take a turn and be able to take up space, but they also want you to be able to take a turn. And if you don't, it makes sense that they might see you as nice, but not necessarily interested in connecting with you further. Also, too, people pleasers in general have a hard time realizing this, but I want to walk you through something important. You scan with your mother, and your mother doesn't notice. So you think you're, quote, unquote, doing good in the relationship. However, for people who want to connect with you, they don't read that scanning as kind, nice, or thoughtful. They read it as distant, as being an observer versus being present. And they assume that you aren't necessarily present or connected. Your mom created this story in you that there's a right thing to say, and she unleashed unholy hell on you when you chose wrong. But that isn't healthy in relationships. So of course you want to be kind and thoughtful and considerate. But if you're looking at the person for their mood, what they need, what they think of you, how interested they are in you, you aren't really present in that moment with them. You're in your head, and often when you're in your head, you end up getting perceived as closed. Because after all, the person you're talking to, the girlfriend or whoever you're in front of, they can't hear your inner dialogue. They just see however you're responding to your own inner dialogue, and that's why you often end up getting misunderstood. Most people, when they see you and you're scanning, they see that as a closed sign, as if you're not open. Perhaps they perceive a boundary and they respect it. They respect that you're closed or otherwise unavailable. They see you as a no vacancy sign and they just move along. I imagine a little bit here, Anne, that you're largely being misunderstood and misperceived. You're stuck in your head, you're trying to guess the right answer, and that behavior, however you look when you're in that scanning mode, is being misinterpreted as you not being available or interested. And yes, by some, it can be misperceived as you feeling superior to others, not because you actually think that or feel that way, but because without your communication, they're judging everything on you or about you on your behavior. And they end up sometimes leaping to those wrong conclusions. The key to connecting more deeply and more meaningfully is stopping the scanning thing. That is going to send your trauma brain haywire at first. We know this. You're going to be so scared to make a mistake of being misunderstood that it might be hard for you to sit in your skin at first. But not scanning means trusting the other person to say what they mean and mean what they say so that you only have to be worried about your side of the fence. When you're scanning the other person so intensely, you are doing both sides of the relationship, having both sides of the conversation, and that makes it really hard for someone to connect with you because the real you isn't actually showing up. And yes, Anne, all of this is totally normal and typical for daughters of narcissistic or otherwise emotionally limited parents. What got you here with them, so to speak, isn't going to get you there with new friends or new acquaintances. You became successful with your mom because you became exceptional at scanning. And that very thing ends up disconnecting you from more emotionally available people. Maya Angelou had this quote, "When someone shows you who they are, believe them the first time." My question for you, Anne, is are you showing up in such a way that people will believe you the first time? What are you hoping people will believe about you, and are you showing them? One thing I really have to recommend to you and everyone listening, and now that I'm saying this, I really wish I had said it sooner at the beginning of the episode, but please, all of you, if you haven't already, go back and give episode 34 a listen. It's that Heartwise Blueprint for Healthy Relationships episode. I talked to Brenda on that one. And I do believe that most everything I said in there about finding healthy love also applies to finding healthy friendships. I walk Brenda through exercises of how to get clear on what she wants, what she's looking for, and whether or not the people she's meeting meet her needs. It's easy to get jealous or feel disconnected at work, but before you go down that rabbit hole, Anne, can you do me a favor and just check in with yourself a little bit that these are actually people you would want to connect further with? Are these people who seem open, inclusive, and welcoming? Are they people that you aspire to be closer to? Just take a second and check in with yourself on this, because you might be reacting to the fact that you don't have connections with them, but also they might just not be your people, but somehow you're wishing yourself to be closer to them anyway. So spend some time on the journal reflections that I offered Brenda in episode 34, and I think you'll find some clarity, insight, and your own intuition in those. Then I would really like you to look at those relationships and the connections you have that do feel safe and successful. How are those connections and those people and those friends different? What makes them work for you? What sort of things do you experience from these friends that you don't experience in other relationships? How do they tend to show up differently? How are you perhaps seen differently, or how do you show up differently? Then I want you to do a gut check. A lot of people feel vulnerable showing up as their whole self, so they're guarded and protected. Are you doing that? If you're being guarded, you aren't showing up as all of you, and then you're wondering why you're not seen, respected, chosen, or included. See how that ends up happening sometimes? Make sure you are putting yourself into the arena that you want to play in, Anne. I imagine that as you listen to the conversation we've had together so far, you can see how your relationship with your mom has impacted your friendships and your other relationships. It does make a lot of sense to me, Anne. She had you thinking that there was a right answer. So, of course, now you scan to figure out the right answers for other people, but you don't know their rule books as well, so you end up feeling behind, out of step, and then disconnected. And you point out that there are blatant ways that your mom has affected you, and you're looking for that nuance. I think one of the things that you might not have connected to for yourself that I sort of see in between the lines of your letter here is that you don't think you, on your own, are enough. I'm reading how you think you need to do more, to be more, to offer more, and that you just showing up and being yourself wouldn't be enough. I wonder too a little bit here, Anne, how much and how well you know yourself. One of the side effects that often comes with people-pleasing and putting the emphasis on other people is that when it comes to knowing what you like, what you prefer, what you bring to the table, you don't always know. People-pleasers come to know other people better than they come to know themselves. And I sense a little bit that that might have happened to you here. It might feel like you're bringing a blank slate to the table a little bit. you might want to spend some time thinking about what you have come to know and learn about yourself. Now that you're coming to terms with who your mom is, you might need to reintroduce yourself to yourself. I bring this example up all the time. They don't need the money, but you might feel like Julia Roberts in Runaway Bride, and you don't know how you like your eggs. You're used to knowing how everyone else likes their eggs and what they like to do in their spare time. But you aren't used to giving voice to what you do. So when you're asked or encouraged to share, you end up going blank a little bit. Combine that with that mild anxiety and tension that you have come to have, trying to figure out the right answer, and of course you get confused, disjointed, and disconnected. The key here is going to be understanding yourself first. It's learning self-acceptance, embracing your preferences, your quirks, your nuances. And remember, you're not going to resonate with everyone. And that's really going to be okay. And this is something we just don't talk about often enough because it hurts to say and hurts to know, but also too, it doesn't make it any less true. It's a reality we are all at some point likely going to have to face. Reflecting on past friendships, I see instances where I was simply too much for some people. Perhaps I was too ambitious, too passionate, too emotionally involved, and I own these aspects about myself. However, I also acknowledge that while I may have been too much in certain areas, I probably felt short in others. That's going to be part of the human experience that we all have. We often fret about being too intense or not enough. And yet what's crucial is embracing our authentic selves. Just as we may not fit everyone's mold, not everyone's meant to fit ours. This is messy, beautiful, hard part of being human and of being real. It's that give and take, the ebb and flow of connections. It's not just going to be about trauma. It's also about navigating the complexities that come with being human. Welcome to the perfectly imperfect journey. I think a lot of women listening into this conversation are likely used to someone else choosing them. You either meet another woman, she seeks you out for more of a connection, you say yes, and this friendship starts and you slide into it. Sometimes disconnects and relationships happen because you say yes to the people choosing you before even asking yourself if you might choose them, if they are people you would consciously choose. You heard me talk to Brenda about that in episode 34, and again, those two episodes really do go hand in hand. All of this is to say, Anne, when you think of the women at work who make friends, quote unquote, so easily, do you like them? Do they interest you? Are there things about them that make you want to get to know them better? One of the reasons you might not have connected to them as successfully as you have with other people is your spidey sense is picking up on the possibility that they may be more like your mom. You might have sensed something about them. If they seem gossipy or judgy, they may not be your people. If they're inconsistent, where they're friendly one day and aloof the next, they may not be your people either. Listen to what your gut is telling you about them before assuming the problem's you. If you realize that you do like them and you do want more of a connection, but that you've been holding yourself back from that, then you've got to lean into them a little bit more. Be curious. Don't worry at the outset about how to be. Just get to know them. Ask questions. Listen to their answers. Ask follow-up questions. And when you identify with things that they share, or they talk about something that reminds you of something about yourself, share those things. Getting to know people doesn't have to feel like a job interview. And I have to be honest with all of you here. I'm also really a big fan of transparent communication and telling people what it is you want them to think and know about you. You are working on being present without distance. So here's something you can try, Anne. If you're making a new connection and you're feeling vulnerable and unsure, don't be afraid to say so. Just say, hey, I recently went through this really big thing with my mom. and it has me looking at how I am in relationships. I don't mean to act so self-consciously. I'm just really trying to show up differently. We don't have to hide all of our soft spots, nor do we need to rip open the scabs and bleed all over people. There's that middle ground in the example I just offered of offering soft, simple explanations, and I encourage you a little bit, Anne, to move closer to that. We don't have to worry about what people are going to think. We tell them what we want them to think. And I hope I modeled that a little bit for you at the start of the show today. I knew that if I didn't say something, I was going to be distracted by the knowledge of former friends likely listening in. I knew I would feel like a hypocrite if I offered this conversation without also including my own truth. And I knew this conversation was important to me to have, so I told you everything I needed to tell you in order to be able to have the conversation without being distracted by my own bullshit. And if you think all of this through and you still feel present and distant, Anne, you might need to check in with your trauma brain a little bit. You might need to tell trauma brain that this is not that. Trauma brain may have you thinking that every woman you meet could turn on you at any moment, that the ground can be taken out from under you at any second. It's okay to remind yourself that this is not that, that these women at work are not your mom, and that it's okay to connect with them. But if you focus on knowing what you bring to the table, and you offer open curiosity about them and are transparent about the things that are distracting you, I imagine you're going to feel more connected. You're going to feel more connected to yourself and to the other people. That tends to be how it works. Now, Diana asked an important question too about vulnerability in relationships, and I'm so glad she did because I think it's for sure connected to what you were talking about, Anne, and your experience. And it's also another part that's critical to narcissistic healing. Now, admittedly, I thought about ending the episode here and doing this as a two-parter, but this is vulnerable for you to listen to. It's vulnerable for me to talk about. So while I'm going, if y'all don't mind, I'm just going to keep at it. So here's the thing. You can know yourself. You can start coming to know other people, and you can begin to start trusting other people a bit. But once a relationship gets connected, you're dealing with vulnerability. So we have to listen in on Diana's question, and I'm going to continue chatting with you on the other side. Here's what Diana asked. Our intimate relationships tend to involve one person, and those have their own dynamics. Friendships for me have recently been a place where I have realized being a victim of narcissistic abuse has crept in. But there is always an opportunity to find friends who offer a place of healing, and it's an area where we can deprioritize friendships that might be the relics of the old me and create new friendships that support healing. I've also realized that the difficulties I have in engaging in intimate relationships go beyond my romantic partner. These tendencies show up in friendships and the degree to which you can form deep bonds with friends. I think a great topic is how to be vulnerable in friendships. I know for me personally, I'm so guarded and hesitant to let friends in on the real me. It also offers an opportunity for testing out our new relationship strategies. I feel like since I've become awakened to the emotional abuse I suffered as a child, I'm more aware of the unhealthy ways I show up in friendships. This has been a real aha moment for me, and I continue to learn. For example, I've had experiences where I may consider a friend to be very close to me, but they don't feel the same way towards me back. I've questioned if it's my lack of openness. Another way it's crept in is I often put someone on a pedestal as a friend, but then when they disappoint me, I cut them off and I don't look back. I'm not able to have conversations expressing my feelings or disappointments, so I just conclude that the friendship needs to end. Okay, Diana. First of all, I just have to be honest with you here and tell you what everyone listening is thinking, that this letter is its own exercise in vulnerability all in of itself. And I know that just like the letter with Anne, so many people, including myself on this one here, are saying me too as they heard what you had to share. So here's what I want to offer all of you on the role of vulnerability in friendships. First, let me say it again. Y'all really do need to go back to the relationships episode that I did with Brenda. It's episode 34. I think I said that already. Anyway, moving on. There's just a lot of good there that I don't think I need to repeat. And I also want you to consider a little bit, Diana, what I asked Anne when she was considering her work colleagues earlier. When you're thinking of people you want to connect with, have you chosen them or are they in your life because they chose you first? Make sure you're consciously connecting to people who you want to be connected to. A lot of people pleasers attract takers, and if you are a giver surrounded by takers, you will for sure feel disconnected because you won't really be with your kind of people. Here's what I want you to know about vulnerability. Vulnerability isn't an all or nothing thing. It doesn't have to happen all at once. And when I talk to clients about this, I often have to remind them that we're not putting them in Times Square and New York City, stripping them naked and saying, "Here, world, here I am, take your best shot." We're going slow. We're offering maybe one piece of information about ourselves, and we're seeing what that other person does with it. Do they listen? Do they hold it with respect? Do they offer vulnerability in return? Are they consistent with you? When you share something else with them, how do they respond? How do they communicate when they're having a bad day? How do they disagree with you? When you communicate with them, do you feel safe? We know trauma brain goes into overdrive in relationships, and sometimes it's unwarranted. So if communication isn't feeling safe, see if you can name why, and then go and check the evidence. Sometimes you're going to have to go with your gut instinct that someone is a danger, and it's going to turn out that you're wrong. Other times you're going to give someone the benefit of the doubt, and it'll turn out that they didn't deserve it, but you were right. That's okay. It's going to suck, I promise. But also, you're not going to die from it. It's part of being human. Not everything is trauma, and not everything is going to re-traumatize us. Things can hurt, be hard, break our hearts, outright suck, and still not be trauma. Hard things hurt. Of course they do. But once we get used to feeling hard things and seeing those hard feelings through, they hurt less. Trauma brain wires you to protect yourself from hurt. Healing means being willing to be hurt because you trust yourself enough to go through it. Diana, I really love that you spoke directly to a tendency to feel closer to a person than the person feels for you. I think that that is one of the most painful things I hear from other women when they're talking about their relationships, and that can be true when they're dating, married, partnered, or just making friends with people. Here's how I want you all thinking about this and learning to manage it. So, you have heard me talk about relating intentionally, and I think I've even talked about building trauma-informed relationships into some of my discussions. At the very least, I'm pretty sure that I spoke about it way back in our fourth episode together when I spoke directly about relationship work after recovering from narcissistic abuse. One of the most critical things you can do in a relationship is tell another person what it is you need in a relationship. And I would argue that most relationships skip this part entirely, but one hard conversation or even a series of hard conversations can make so many other things easier and far less painful. Once you all get to know yourselves and know your needs in relationships, you are going to be challenged to be unapologetic and matter-of-fact about them. Having needs doesn't make you needy. It makes you human. So when you get to know someone, either as a friend or someone you're dating, I strongly encourage you to say something along the lines of, "I'm really glad to be getting to know you, and this connection between us has become quite meaningful to me. I've made a mistake before in relationships with unspoken things and assumptions, and I really don't want to do that again. Would it be okay if we talked about what you need in a friendship, and I want to share a little bit what I need too?" I sometimes get in this awful habit of guessing or assuming and trying to read minds, and that really makes one hell of a mess, and I want to do it better this time. Again, at any time I offer you guys words or scripts, use your words, use your scripts. That's just an outline for something to consider in talking about. So always adapt these things to you. The other person, when you lay down something like that, may not know how to do this any better than you do. And they may never have considered the question for themselves because not everyone's the most personally developed person on the planet, right? But how they respond to your request is going to tell you everything you need to know about whether or not they're safe for you and safe to be vulnerable with. Because if they are cold or chilly or distant to that request, they're likely not capable of anything that comes after. And you might be met with total respect and openness and still find that people can't meet your needs and they will politely decline. It's gonna suck, but it's good for you to know, and good that they told you, because then you're not wasting time or any more vulnerability getting close to someone who doesn't even want to hold it. I would also argue that when that happens, it isn't rejection. It's really good communication. They aren't rejecting you. They're simply acknowledging that the way you move in relationships isn't the way that they do. And it's okay, and it will be okay. You want to be comfortable expressing an opinion, disagreeing, and a whole host of other things down the line. All of that gets easier to do when you commit to building a relationship on a solid foundation. Then, Diana, the vulnerability challenge becomes more about personal accountability with yourself. Checking in with yourself at the end of each day about how you showed up, if you showed up, and how you felt about showing up. If you wished for more connection, make note of that. If someone invited you to share more, did you? Did you want to? Did you respect your own boundaries around communication and communicate that? You don't have to tell everyone everything. You do have to tell people when something isn't comfortable to talk about and let them know what your own limit is and what your own boundary is. And if you wanted to learn more about them or you're curious about them, you ask, you listen to their answers, and of course, obviously, goes both ways. Respect it when people don't want to share back. All of that is going to mean that you are getting closer to someone. And that can be really, really hard and intimidating and its own pile of vulnerability. There are all kinds of friendships and relationships out there, and there are all kinds of preferences inside of those friendships and those relationships. There's nothing one size fits all about any of this. And for all of you, relationships and friendships are going to be triggering at times and challenging for you. But if you're open to learning what your triggers are and what they're telling you and what you can learn from the parts of all of this that are challenging, you're going to find that you get closer to the kinds of relationships you want to be in. And you will have an easier time finding your people. Whew, my gosh. This is really hard stuff, ladies. And I have to tell you, if it were easy, everyone would be doing it. And if there is anything that we have learned is that everyone is walking around with some kind of unhealed trauma. If you don't bump into yours, you might find yourself bumping into theirs. It happens. Disagreements are okay and should feel okay. If you're walking on eggshells, feel like you can't disagree, or you feel like the whole relationship's going to blow up if you speak honestly, it's more than likely that the relationship isn't healthy. If you're only fearing the loss of a relationship, but you haven't actually experienced the person as being cold or rejecting, that might be your trauma brain talking, and it might be your experience with your mom talking, and you might need to get a little bit more into wise mind before you proceed. Diana, people are for sure going to show up for you with deal breakers in relationships. You will feel in your body and in your bones that something is off, wrong, or intolerable. And listen to that. But if you're just holding hurt feelings that you're afraid to express and you might not need to end the relationship, and it might not be a sign that the relationship needs to end, you just might be in a misunderstanding that needs to be worked through. And if you can take your time a little bit and go slow and communicate transparently, perhaps the friendship can end up being stronger for it instead of weakened by it. Whew, okay, ladies, we did it. We got through a really hard and vulnerable conversation. I know that this probably brought up a whole lot of thoughts and feelings for all of you, because I sure as heck know that it did for me. And you know what? I think we'll probably keep talking about it. So what I offer all of you is write in to Heather@daughtersnpd.com and let's keep talking about it. After all, I had this conversation with you guys and I didn't die. So we're going to keep talking about it and we're going to keep learning from one another. Healing from trauma isn't just about recovering from what happened to us. It's also about looking at how we've been impacted by what happened to us, examining what doesn't work for us or doesn't serve us, and asking ourselves what we are willing to do for what it is we say we want. You are in a community of women around the world who are in this with you, and I for sure am too. Okay, I'm going to go run off and I'm going to watch some Golden Girls and I'm going to watch somebody feed Phil, and I am going to go nurse what inevitably is going to be a major vulnerability hangover for me. Okay, we did it, ladies. Bye for now. I'm so grateful that you're here. You're right where you're supposed to be. At its heart, I'm hoping to use this show to build a community of women working together to heal from childhoods marked by maternal narcissism and emotional neglect. My goal for Mother Mayhem is that this show becomes an advice and mentoring-driven show where you share your questions, struggles, and stories, and I offer you direction for healing and recovery. That can't happen without your contributions. I invite you to send a recorded voice memo or write in an email with your questions and things you're struggling with. You can always find me over at Heather@daughtersnpd.com. To connect further, I invite you to find me over at Instagram and occasionally on TikTok @daughtersnpd. If you know another woman who needs this conversation in her life, I'm going to ask that you share the show with her. You can help me get the word out with your reviews and social shares of the show, and I hope you'll consider doing so. Special thanks to Heather Clark for editing this show. She's in my head and knows what I meant to say when the words come out backwards. Thanks for your time today. I'm always in it with you. Bye for now.